Hello there.
Peter, it's Matthew.
Hello, Matthew. How are you going?
Very good. I took a real chance because I've called you live on air because
no
I was in a fun gossip session off air with a bunch of people, and time got away from me, and you know, I was boasting that I'd lost my voice and that I felt like I was super interesting because I'd lost my voice, but it seems to be back and I'm ready to go. So how are you?
I'm excellent, thank you.
Good. What are we talking about today?
Well, the Pope's encyclical on artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting because there's been, I think on the whole, a pretty positive response. Quite intriguing, the Vatican getting involved in such issues as artificial intelligence.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, first of all, just what's an encyclical?
So an encyclical is where the Pope gives Catholic teaching on a specific area.
Ah, right.
And in this category, there are a group of encyclicals which are about how to apply the faith to issues and debates that are going on in wider society.
Okay.
And this is one of those. So they're called social encyclicals.
I like it.
Yeah. And it is quite interesting to me that you would think, how would a pope or any high bishop know anything about these matters? You know, you might think he would be completely detached from it. But I tell you, the reading, of course, I don't know, is there a writing team that prepares these things? But there are little touches in it which suggest that it's got his hand in it. I was quite delighted to find a quotation from Frodo in Lord of the Rings.
Cool.
And I don't think any Vatican committee would have dreamt up that quotation.
What was the quote?
So it was about where Frodo is saying, oh, there are bits that we just don't know what's going on, but all we can do is do our duty in this present time.
Yeah, I like
in
that.
These dark times. And you know, it was a really apposite quotation. It was nice. I liked it.
Yeah. Well, Frodo always knew what he was talking about, didn't he? Wow. And so what was the kind of, what was the
so
gist? It wasn't just,
so,
this is
so
bad,
the gist
ignore?
Of the argument is that where AI diminishes the sense of people's humanity and where AI begins to substitute for human contact, then something is seriously wrong, and economic interests have taken the place of a proper sense of human worth. So it's not a particularly original argument, but it's developed in a very distinctive way. These encyclicals have to work their way through a set of Catholic principles, of which the least familiar is the principle of subsidiarity. Bet you don't know what subsidiarity means.
Good guess, yeah.
Yes? What do you guess?
Oh, no, as in, that was a good guess that I have no idea.
Oh, yeah, okay. So subsidiarity is the argument in Catholic teaching that the best people to decide an issue are those closest in contact with the issue. So if you're going to talk, if there's issues to be made about the family, they're best made in the family, not by a body outside of it.
Right.
And that having state institutions dictate issues of family morality is not appropriate. And I don't know how it came to have the name subsidiarity, but that's a very distinctive Catholic doctrine that will regularly be rolled out in situations like this. And so this means, in this context, that it's too easy for huge corporations to decide to tempt us into a point where we must use AI, and that should not be the level at which the decision is being made. It should be made much closer to the question we're considering.
Right, isn't this sort of saying we should be given the option to, because it is, it's pretty insightful, because it is, I noticed I was looking at my phone before, and where before I would have been on whatever browser I was on, it had been replaced with its AI version, and it had a new logo, and it was I didn't ask for that, you know. You have to, and you really have to go in there, into your settings, and say, please don't make me use AI, because, you know, it's pretty great and pretty insightful a lot of times, and it does give you some pretty interesting answers, but sometimes they're wrong, and that is like,
yeah, and And that's the scary bit, especially where you need right answers.
That's right.
The other interesting thing I found fascinating about this whole encyclical is there was a discussion of transhumanism, so which, you know, is allied to the question of AI, because if there is a notion that there is a new species of humanity emerging that is being produced by mechanical means, as you can imagine, the Pope isn't too enthusiastic about this. And it presupposes a kind of improvement to the human condition brought about by mechanical means. And you can imagine all the Christian objections that might arise to that.
Yeah. Wow.
But transhumanism is a hot subject in some quarters. And to see an encyclical dealing with a pretty specialised part of the AI debate, I thought was impressive.
Yeah, because you could imagine that they'd keep it as simple as God is not in the machine, so we will not, you know.
Yeah, so, but it's not simplistic like that. And clearly it's been worked through with people who know something about the subject, and there's been careful discussions going on. But, of course, he also needs to prove, in typical papal fashion, that this is consistent with a line of Vatican teaching going back centuries, if necessary. And so it's a more complicated mode of reasoning than you or I might feel the duty bound to undertake. But the discussion of human rights is pretty interesting, because one thing that has occurred is that historically, you could quote the Catholic Church back in the mid-19th century as furious with the notion of human rights. And really, up until really in the 1920s, there was bitter resistance to the notion that inherent in every human is a right, because the only rights that we have come from God, and so they're not human rights, they're divine rights. That was the old discourse. But papal thinking decided that needed to move with the United Nations and the Declaration, the International Declaration on Human Rights, which was 1947, I think. And from the Second Vatican Council began using human rights language, and now it's really deeply in the substance of the discussion, which I think is interesting, because it suggests that religious discussion of ethical issues does develop, does sort of move with the times, albeit a little bit more slowly than some of the rest of us move.
Even if it's just to recognise human rights after hundreds of years,
Yes. And see, what that also implies is that we're part of a common humanity, and although there are reflections for Catholics, there's plenty of reflections for the rest of us, in which it's been written in a manner that you could imagine a discussion going on about it, which it wouldn't be inappropriate out of a church context.
Mm. Interesting.
So the bit that I've been watching, because I wasn't originally going to talk on this.
Sure.
I thought, well, maybe, you know, this is a bit of a dull topic. But then I started seeing reactions to the papal statement from various people, and especially the comment that the Silicon Valley was just despised the Pope for having any opinions on this subject.
Yeah, well, they're kind of, you know, the Pope's out of fashion in the American corporate world, isn't he?
Yes, if he ever was in fashion, but most certainly out of fashion these days, you're right. And so that aspect of it intrigued me, because I think in a way it's a backhanded compliment. When you spend a lot of time criticising something, it suggests that you can't completely leave them out of the story. And I think that's part of what's going on.
Mm.
And so that, I think it has struck a bit of a chord at a time when lots of people are querying what is going on with AI, and didn't want to have the discussion, but now feel we can't be left out of it, like you with your internet browser.
Yeah, it's like, well, it's here. Are you ignoring it? Because it'll probably creep up on you if you do.
That's right. The other thing that I thought is fascinating is, how does a pope begin to feel like a pope. You know, it's quite a huge transition to go from being a bishop, even a bishop in higher places, to being a pope. And to, if you like, stepping into
your first big job.
Yeah, that's right.
Your first big issue.
And especially when it comes when you're 70 years old and you know. But I was fascinated to watch, and it made me think that Leo had been thinking long before he was elected by a pope. If I was pope, what would I do?
And yeah, right.
Maybe half the cardinals in the world are reflecting on that. Maybe each of them has an encyclical, which they'll never write because they'll never be elected, up their sleeves, waiting to come out when the chance first offers itself. And I suppose, I don't know what you've ever thought, what you would do if you were manager of BFM, or what I would
no,
do.
No, Peter, I have never thought about that, and I don't want to be the manager of BFM. Tom's job is secure.
Okay, yes, fair enough. But most people probably spend their time criticising the boss and thinking, you know, I could do better than that.
I don't do that either, Tom.
Okay, but...
No, it's interesting because I've known people, you know, who don't want positions of power because they, once you get the position of power, that's your final stop, and once you're done with that, you're done. So,
and it generally destroys people because most people are a disappointment when they take higher positions, you know, going beyond their pay grade, you know the story. But in this case, there's a certain serenity and confidence that he brings, which I found pretty interesting, because you might recall, no, you wouldn't recall, but of the previous popes, Benedict, in effect, you know, he abdicated. He just couldn't handle the business of dealing with the Vatican bank problems and all those things. Francis was right on the edge of being over the age limit where he could probably be considered. And he started off with a radical agenda, you know, to not do the traditional things that a pope does.
Yeah.
And so he was on his own pathway. Leo has, of course, gone back to the traditions, but with a difference, trying to pick up the best of Francis's approach. And I initially didn't like Leo. I'm not quite sure why. I think it was because he chose the name Leo the 14th. But I think now we can see, actually, a really significant, purposeful approach that he's taking to the worst job in the world, probably.
Well, that's, good way of looking at it. He hasn't sort of, as you say, he's sort of reversed from the kind of the everyman style, the last one, but he hasn't. Also has, you know, and he's also got in his what do you call it, in his cons corner that he's American, right? So a lot of us out there will
be like,
oh, here we go. He's going to, you know, it's going to be McDonald's Vatican or whatever. And he hasn't done that.
No, he hasn't done that. He's used it, to challenge Trump rather than to fall for Trumpism.
Yeah, he might be one of the only ones too that could sort of, could do it. Yeah. All right. Well, interesting. And we remain, of course, as we. Oh, last question. What are the hot Catholic influencers on Instagram think about it?
Mostly, they're pretty stunned that he's come out with something that is actually making some sense. Because pretty typically, the Catholic influencers, you know, of the younger set, tend to make their fire of attacking the state old church and we could do it better. But in this case, I think they've been pretty satisfied with what they've been served up.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Peter. We will we'll speak to you again soon and next week, hopefully. And thank you very much for your time. And, I guess it's yet another story we keep our eye on.
Great.
Indeed.
Okay.
Thanks, Peter. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That is Peter Lynham. Yeah, interesting. You know, everyone's going to.